Hello, everybody. Good morning and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin here again. Seems like every 2 minutes rather than every week that we're here, Justin, when it comes around again. It's like, here we are again. And how wonderful to have that kind of punctuation in our lives where we arrive again and again in the same constellation with different things to say and different things to talk about. So everybody, you're very welcome. And today is very special because we have something written by Justin for us to talk about. And I think it's true for both of us, Justin, that when we bring things that we've written, it's like we have evidence that we were kind of like a vehicle for something to be delivered, but it teaches us again something. It shows us something again. It's not like when you write something is because you know it already. It comes and then it reteaches us. And it reminds me, Justin, that there are times when I'm feeling hopeless and horrible about everything, and I listen to us again and I think, oh, I think yes, everything might be just a little bit better than I thought it was. And so I want to just say that it's so lovely when you bring your writing, because it's like we get to, and I think you get to receive it again, and we can receive ourselves again, and that we're not excluded in the receipt part of this thing that we're in, this conversation that we're in, that we're in receipt of it just as much as anybody else's, if not more. Because I don't know, sometimes I've had this projection on people who write things that, oh, it, because they've written that, they're completely sorted or something. And of course it's just not that way. And so to feel ourselves included in the receiving part of this feels really important. So welcome everybody into the receiving part as well. And Justin, thank you for writing this and for remembering it existed and for bringing it back again to us here.
Oh, thanks so much, Lizzie, and hello everybody, welcome. I've got this very strong sense of Lizzie this morning of how us being both live and a podcast stretches across time, and there's a real time element to this piece of writing as well, which I'll say in a moment. But so I really want to say hello to everyone who's listening at some far off point in the future, long after the 16th of January 2022.
Yeah. You're
so welcome to be here with us too, on all the different forms that this comes. And, you know, I suppose, Lizzie, I've been thinking a lot. We've often talked a lot about practice and the nature of practice, and that this is practice for us and also for many people who listen, who make it weekly practice that we do simply because we're practicing. And everything that comes from it comes from the commitment to practice. So that sense of it coming around again and again and again. And the, I think the reason I'm saying this is because I got onto something from what you said, that we get to receive from practice. It's the nature of practice that we don't just do it because. I don't think there's any morning when I wake up in the morning and think, oh, I really, really feel like going and doing a podcast at 9 o'clock in the morning this morning, even though I'm really happy to be here. It's more like, this is my practice, and then something comes from it. We get to receive in the middle of it. So I know that I'm receiving always so much from being with you and being with the sources written by many people that we read, and being in this unfolding conversation, and being in a community of people who are dedicated to coaching and development and learning and being human and dignifying and all of that. And one of the ways in which I got to receive is this piece, which is going to be our source, which, for any of you who don't know, you can always find in our Facebook group. You can just search for Turning Towards Life, or on our website, which is turningtowards.life, or with the notes that go out with podcasts and YouTube videos and Instagrams and all of that. I want to say thank you to Divya. So Divya is someone I know from a few years ago who came across this piece of writing that I wrote, I don't know when. And Divya sent it back to me this week to say thank you for it. And I read it, and two things happened. One was, I was very glad that it had been of use to others. So that was why I brought it. So thank you, Divya, for bringing it back into our orbit. But second of all was, I realized how much I needed it. And although I know I wrote this because it's got my name on it, it feels like it comes as a gift from one, you know, one in the past who saw this and felt this and felt like it needed saying, and then offered it into the world, and now it's circled back and it's here, and it's meeting me too. So I hope it will in some way meet all of us. And it's called Loving Our Brokenness. We have to find a way to love our brokenness. No, not loving ourselves in spite of our failings, but loving the brokenness itself. We have to love all the ways we're late and all the ways we miss the point. We have to love that we were scared and that we were ashamed to say it. We have to love that we didn't get it all done, and love that we imagined that it was doable in the first place. We have to love that we're such a glorious mess and how we struggle to meet our own standards. We have to learn to love, in short, all the ways we fall short, because our grace, courage, and capacity to stand, our care of what's broken in the world around us, is strongest when we're carried by that which we've learned to cherish, and not when we're mired in that which we've chosen to hate.
Thank you, Justin. We have to find a way to love our brokenness. No, not loving ourselves in spite of our failings, but loving the brokenness itself. We have to love all the ways we're late and all the ways we miss the point. We have to love that we were scared and that we were ashamed to say it. We have to love that we didn't get it all done, and love that we imagined it was doable in the first place. And have to love that we're such a glorious mess and how we struggle to meet our own standards. We have to learn to love, in short, all the ways we fall short. Because our grace, courage, and capacity to stand, our care of what's broken in the world around us, is strongest when we're carried by that which we've learned to cherish, and not when we're mired in that which we've chosen to hate.
Thanks so much for reading that, Lizzie. I feel like I don't want to say very much about this yet. I want to sort of wait.
Well, I'm happy to start.
Yeah, will you start? Will you begin?
I will.
Yeah, go.
It's funny. I'm seeing in this moment that we normally have this thing of like the person who brings the source speaks first. But of course, we don't have to do that, do we? So I'm really happy. I can feel
we can
so
do whatever
much.
We like.
Woohoo! We're crazy. So Justin, as you were reading it, I could feel this joy in me, this kind of hilarity in me, because I feel like I'm constantly falling short. And this poem is like a very different way to receive the falling shortness. And how wonderful to feel joy at it. Like all the ways that I have this inner refusal to do the washing up, all the ways I have like this rebellion that goes, I'm not going to do what's good for me now. It feels so appropriate to love those ways that I have. You know, there's this like really excellent self-care saying of like, do your future self some favors. And I fail at that all the time. And I feel really like there's something about the cyclical nature of when we give ourselves a hard time that it never solves anything. Like it doesn't solve anything to keep telling myself off for not doing the thing I should be doing. And this feels like a kind of possible break in the chain of like, oh, I could just be light about that thing. I could just laugh at myself. I could just be in love with the way that I am, rather than criticize it or try and bash it into a way that I think it should be according to some learned standard or something. So I'm feeling a real kind of, I don't know, sharp intake of liberating breath of, oh my gosh, yes, look at the ways. And of course, then when I start doing this, it's a really like a kind of, you know, like when you push something off, like a big ball off of on a slope, it kind of gets faster and faster. That experience is kind of happening in me, where I think, oh my God, look how much I love things. Look how much I love our unmade bed. And look how much I love the imperfection and the mess of certain systems that I'm in. Like suddenly I can feel appreciation where I could have felt grumble or annoyedness. And so I'm really, really appreciating the kind of the new pair of glasses you've given me, you know, where I go, oh, that's lovable. That's not something to detest or something to be annoyed with or something to complain about. Like without that, what would my life look like? I would have like some kind of acerbic life, which is the thing I really don't want. So I can find the part of me that doesn't want the brokenness to go away, because it makes life full and delicious and flavoursome. And I realise, though, I'm, you know, speaking about quibbles. And I can also find this about the really deep, dark, horrible stuff, like being very, very broken on the bathroom floor, crying, thinking I'm never going to get out of here because this hurts too much. And then when I can come through it, I can also see that as like, well, how would I be if I hadn't done that? If that hadn't run through me and racked my body in this horrific way, who would I be? I'd be less compassionate. I'd be less able. I'd feel less faithful. I'd feel less capable. So I can feel the love of brokenness basically being what makes life rich, what makes it flavorful and mad and interesting. This is such a different way to relate than there's something wrong.
I love that you're, thank you for speaking first. And I'm immediately really touched by the way that you're bringing in that which is deeper and darker than is expressed in these words. You know, our terror, our grief at all the losses and at the way life isn't how we imagined it would be. All of that is included in this, of course. And the thing that really struck me, Lizzie, as you were giving all the examples you were giving, got wondering about what it is, for all the gifts of it, what it is to grow up in as the children of first of a machine age and then a computer age and then a internet age and then all of that. And particularly that the machine age metaphors for what's good involve an enormous amount of perfection and no grit, no dust, no dirt, no mess, no, you know, for something to work really well, everything has to be oiled and everything has to be efficient and everything has to turn and everything has to shine and everything has to whatever. And I wonder if that's in a way sort of the root of why this is so difficult for us, is that without knowing it, we're comparing ourselves to something which isn't us. We look at the machines that we make and we take on that frame or that way of understanding ourselves, and then we set ourselves standards that, like you say, actually, I mean, that was the thing that was so heartwarming to me, was where you got to and what you said was, well, and if all of these things came true, like if my life was all of these things and it didn't have all of this small and big mess in it, the way I hurt and the way the bedroom is disorganized and the way that there's dirt on the floor that I haven't swept up yet and the way that the crockery is cracked and the way, and the way that I didn't have the status I imagined I would have or the security I imagined I would have, you know, all of that, that if it all just worked out according to the image that we have, it would be acerbic, it would be cold, there would be no, very, very little room for anything alive in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I then I so then whilst you were talking, the other thing that came to me was, and so what else might we, I mean, obviously the best thing for us to imagine ourselves is as us. But if we were going to pick any kind of metaphor or your narrative for what life is, you could pick a forest or a field of flowers or a mountain or a whole ecosystem, or there's lots of things you could pick, all of which would have in it the unpredictability, the chance, the irregularity, the beauty of what's uniquely here and is like nothing else because of its own configuration. We'd sort of get all of that, we'd feel all of it, and then we might be able to say, well, we're much more like that, we're much more kin with that than we are with the machines that we've made and the systems that we've made, which we've made for good reason, but they're of us, but they're not us. And then we could love both that. It seems to me, isn't it, it's wonderful that we can imagine future possibilities for ourselves, but it's also equally wonderful that we missed the point, and that we were scared and we were ashamed, and that we missed the future possibilities that we set for ourselves. That's much more like a living, unfolding, living flow that we are than the mechanical, cold, shiny, perfect, uninterruptible machines.
Good Lord, Justin, I have not heard and felt this in my body before about the machine age thing. And as you were talking about that, I could feel this huge relief in me. You know, when like a big story about being human gets named, and you go, oh my gosh, yes, that's what I've been doing to myself. That's what I see other people doing to themselves. And you said children of the machine age. It was like clunk. Oh my gosh, that's what we're doing to ourselves. Because there aren't enough like meta narratives, big stories that name that, that show us what we're doing to ourselves. And I think that is so important. And I can feel it so profoundly kind of running itself through me. And one of the things as I was imagining, I don't really know about machinery other than, you know, real basic things, but I can imagine there are plates that have to run very, very smoothly against each other. And you were saying when the grit and the dirt gets in the way, they kind of stop. But of course, that's so unrepresentative of a human relationship as well. So if you're one of those plates and I'm one of those plates and there's grit between us, the story we have, and I can feel it in myself, it's like, oh my gosh, if there's any discord between us, we stop. That's it. It doesn't work anymore. But of course, if you use your metaphor of the forest, when tree roots intertwine with each other, they work with each other, where they work around each other, they accommodate one another, they shelter one another when they need it, they do all kinds of sophisticated relational, natural practices, if you like. And so that's what we need to learn. How to be the forest and how to be in relationship like the trees are in relationship, and study the trees and see how they relate to one another and what they do for one another. And that can be our standard rather than the machines. I mean, it feels so brilliant that that can be seen and talked about that way. It's so beautiful. And we have such weird standards. When I stand in the forest and look at the machine thing, it's like, what? How could we treat ourselves that way? How could we think that pieces of, you know, metal and cogs and screws, whatever exists in a machine, are like us? There's no living matter, there's no squishiness, there's no mess. And so I feel like a bit stunned and a bit kind of altered by you saying all of that, and just feeling very connected to the nature of us in this moment and what we are and what we're not, and how bonkers it is to compare ourselves to something that's nothing like us. Like we're just going to be really cross with ourselves and really miserable and feel like we're failing all the time because we're comparing ourselves to something that's nothing to do with us. That's quite something.
I love that we're heading into the metaphor of the forest. I see that you brought us that way. So I cycle every day through something that's not exactly a forest, but it's certainly a large wood. And it's got some quite old trees in. And it's filled with beautiful, gnarly trees. And they're so beautiful in their difference from one another. And they're still beautiful when lightning struck a limb of the tree and it's come off, or part of the tree is alive and part of the tree is not thriving, or it's trees have got twisted with one another, or they're beautiful when they're small and when they're big, when they're young, when they're old. They don't, the ordinary standards that we easily apply to ourselves don't apply there. They simply are being themselves unapologetically, and also doing all these things that you said about the way that trees support one another and twine around one another and reach for one another and all that. And there's something in a book by Mark Nepo, whose work we've drawn on before, Lizzie, where he says it's a really helpful thing to do, to go out into the world and to find things that are like us, that remind us of us. And he, in fact, talks about going out and finding a particularly gnarly, twisted branch that's come off a tree and going, well, that's kind of like me, actually. And then allowing ourselves to be in relationship with what we find and to feel the beauty and the dignity of the thing that's there. And it cuts through. When we're in this conversation about what meta-narratives that we live in, or what we find as kin in the world, would be another way of saying the same thing. We can also cut through the overthinking that we do all the time about it, because I know that when I'm in trouble, I'm often thinking in the way that this poem points to, of not loving my own brokenness and not loving. That's why when Divya sent this back to me, I really felt like I needed it, because I realized I'd got caught again in feeling despairing about how far I can be from what I imagine I ought to be. And when we find that in the world which isn't up to that, we can relax that. I think one of the things that happens to us, it's not just that we live in an age, it's not just that for 200 plus years we as in many cultures we've been so enamored by our own machinery that we've made, we've been so in awe of it that we've thought that that's what we are, and then we have to compare ourselves with it. And I think that that is really deeply rooted in our culture. It's not just as an idea, it's also every time we come across being equated to an exam result, or being in a job and someone saying, here's your grade, or here's your pay grade, or here's your performance grade, or it's happening all over the place. For many of us are actually in, not just in sort of metaphorical contact with it, we actually are in contact with it, because things keep on coming us that way, that give us, that reduce us to numbers. So we're reminded of all the time, but we very rarely actually, unless we have practices for it, and this is sort of a whole world that's opening up for me as we're talking, we're often in a set of practices that remind us of the machine metaphor, but that don't remind us of the other possibilities. And so one of the ways of responding to these words is to wonder at, not just about the, bless you, not just wondering about the like the inner work that we can each do, catching our own processes of thinking and judgment and comparison and all of that that we do, but the other thing might be putting ourselves in contact with that which can remind us of our own gorgeous, messy, unfolding, unpredictable, particular, not at all machine-like aliveness that we are.
Yeah. So I feel completely like I need to go out of the house and find things that are either undone or discarded or natural or something, just to go and do the thing you're saying, Justin. I'm really reminded of, there's a tree in Richmond Park that happened to be the place where Matthew, my husband, and I had our first date. It was in the summer and we took a picnic of pies and pims and sat by this tree. And it was a tree that is so extraordinary. It's so beautiful. I think it's probably in lots of people's books of special trees, if you know what I mean. It's a really, not as in an academic book, but in the book of the heart of like, this tree means something to us, because it got blown down in a storm and all of its roots are exposed, and it found its way back into the earth again and then grew lying down. So it's literally like half, it looks like half a tree with its branches kind of reaching for the sky as branches would normally do, but it's completely horizontal. And it also then has this little kind of alcove, if you like, that shelters. And so it's like an obvious little kind of place that you could gather as well, because of the way it's fallen, and has this little place to sit where the top of the base of the tree meets where the branches begin. And I feel like I have to go find it today and sit there, and, you know, maybe something of us knew that our relationship would be higgledy-piggledy and fallen over and would find new ways, because the old ways of ordinary tree-ness might not work. And so I'm really moved by that tree and know there's somewhere to go to know myself, to feel into the possibility of this kind of fallen overness and finding new ways and thriving and being beautiful and being special and, you know, a place that you want to go, rather than, oh my gosh, let's avoid that tree because it doesn't look like the trees in the picture books. It's like, let's go there and see that we are that and that is us. And I feel like, what a practice. How foundationally important is that practice to seek out those things that are like us and that we should be comparing ourselves to? Like, how much have I had to find a way? How much have I fallen over? How much have I been blown around by life? How much have I felt snapped? How vulnerable have I felt with all my roots exposed? It's like a whole new set of attributes that feel like they are, when I compare myself to them in just in this moment, I can feel the kind of, oh, it's all right that I'm all those things. It's not like I'm ruined. This is just the nature of things, the way, the normalness of being a human is all those things.
That's so moving hearing you say this, Lizzie. And I can imagine myself going and finding a tree like that and getting my hand on it.
Yeah.
And saying, hello, I'm one of you and you're one of me, we're tribe.
Mm.
Because it really is such a counter to the, I didn't know I was going to talk about the machine metaphor before we start, but it really is a counter to that. I can feel that what makes, one of the things that makes this invitation and these words so important for me is because it's so easy, I suspect it is for so many of us, to compare ourselves with the shiny, well-oiled, something that has no grit and no confusion and no, and of course I always fall, in one way I always fall short of that, and second of all, like you said, I wouldn't even want to be that.
Yeah.
I actually went and got my hand on that and went, hello, you're like me. I could feel the coldness of it and the emptiness of it, but I get my hand on this magnificent, gnarly, fallen over tree that's found its own very particular way of living with the conditions in which it's lived. It's responded to who and what it's around in the only way it could, and it's all higgledy-piggledy and upside down and back to front. And it's beautiful because it is uniquely the one that it could be in that place. And then we get our hands on it and go, I'm like you. And that's such a relief. You can really feel the relief in that.
Yeah.
And for me, it's helping me to understand this practice I have, why it's so important to me, the place I go to swim every day, which is a deep, dark, cold in the winter, very cold in the winter lake. Because I realize that when I get into that water, it meets the part that of me, which is deep and dark and fierce and grieving and silent and wide and holding and immense and infinite and has no language. And I find in me what is unmet otherwise, met by the thing that is also me. And so we're like sisters or brothers or cousins, or you know, that's what we are, and we get reflected in one another. So maybe that's our work. Maybe maybe a big part of our work for each of us is to actively ourselves and together with others is to find better stories, but better partners in understanding ourselves than the ones that we've been handed and the ones that we've chosen because of what we've been handed, which are these well-oiled machine-like things. We need to go and find the living, whether it's as small as a fish or as large as a continent, whatever it is, and to sort of get our hands on it or get close to it and feel our alikeness. And that might help us learn to cherish, as these words say, to cherish exactly what there is to cherish.
Yeah. My God, Justin, I can feel so many things I want to say, but I know that we're towards the end of our time. But it's bringing up for me lots of things that I notice I have massive aversions to, like efficiency, for example. I could really find efficiency really difficult. Like, it's so like heralded as the thing. It's so boring. Like, it's got no life in it for me. It's like, well, I just think there are bigger fish to fry than the efficiency of something. And of course, I get that efficiency is excellent in some settings or whatever, but that is the way that we relate to anything other than the things that that's relevant to. It makes me really kind of agitated and kind of, hold on, what are we missing here? And this is a perfect kind of meeting of that part of me that goes, hold on, everyone, there's something else more important than efficiency in this situation. So I'm feeling really grateful to be met in that place. And this is such an important conversation. I'm so grateful. Thank you for bringing this source, Justin, and thank you for being the person who swims in the deep dark lakes and finds himself met in a place like that.
It's really beautiful. Thank you, Lizzie. What a place to take up some other time when we find a way.
Yeah.
Just say back to you what you said, which is efficiency is excellent in some places, but in many, many places for our life, it's a terrible metaphor for who we could be and who we should be. And that's the thing to hold on to here is where we're importing into our own everydayness a metaphor for what it is to be a human, a narrative about what it is to be a human that doesn't apply there, that will apply in some places but doesn't apply there. That's the thing that we're doing here, and it's lovely to be in this conversation. And as you say, we have reached the time that it is time to close. So I'm going to say thank you to you, Lizzie, and thank you to everyone for being with us. I just want to remind everyone that you can subscribe to our email. You can get this by email on turningtowards.life, and you can also email us to say hello. And we're just Lizzie or Justin or hello@turningtowards.life. We'd love to be in conversation with you all. And we are going to end now, and we'll be back, all being well, this time next week.
Thank you, Justin. Bye, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.